Welcome to the ATL Podcast Network.
Mental health in the Black community is so stigmatized. People are more afraid of being labeled crazy than actually living with a mental illness. Like, it's so ironic that people will read every single self-help book there is instead of just going to therapy. Mental health is real, people, and we all have problems. So why not be the best version of you? And if that includes therapy, what's the worst that could happen? Hey everyone, it is therapist KP, aka Kiwasha Naomi, and I am back for our fourth episode of Mental Unwind, and I'm glad that you all took the time to listen to us today. I have a very special guest that I'm super excited about. In our last episode, we talked about borderline personality disorder, and I actually have a guest here who is living with that particular disorder. I'm going to let him introduce himself. How are you doing today, Ajani?
Hello. My name is Ajani Young. I do have borderline personality disorder. I'm going to say diagnosed maybe 6 years ago, 6-7 years ago.
Okay.
I'm also the host of a podcast I do with my husband, Chris. It's called Borderline Idealist, where we talk about introvert living, so introverts and people that like to be alone but not really, and people with borderline personality disorder and mental health issues. So we kind of try to bring all that together into one.
Fair enough. Thank you for joining. I appreciate it. So I want to just kind of jump right in because we don't have that much time. Did you get a chance to listen to the last episode? I kind of brought you in at the last. Mentioned you at the ending of that. So you did. What were your thoughts about that? Is that something that you've heard of, you know, being with the diagnosis? Because, of course, you know, dealing with different professionals can be, you hear different things. So, you know, what were your thoughts about it?
I thought it was an accurate portrayal of borderline personality disorder. Sensitive we are at a young age, how we, I think looking for the validation in people, how we have a hard time managing our emotions. But, you know, that doesn't mean that we can't manage our emotions. It just means that we need a little extra help doing that.
Yeah.
So I thought it was a very good episode, and I hope we can talk about it a little bit more.
Oh, sure. So we are going to talk about it a little bit more, but I just kind of want to get into, we're going to jump around a little bit with your life.
Okay.
So let's start from when you actually got diagnosed. What kind of led you to the point where you went and got diagnosed? This was your diagnosis. What were the events leading up to it, or, you know, what was going on there?
Well, I remember I was 23 years old. I was, just to go back a little bit more, I can remember the symptoms of looking for validation and being very sensitive started when I was in middle school.
Okay.
So I started to tell my parents, I would say, you know, I'm feeling dreamy. I'm feeling out of my body. I'm not feeling good.
Yeah.
And at that time, I didn't know it was an anxiety attack. It was or a panic attack. And they would be like, "Oh, whatever. Do your homework." You know, you know, parents.
Yeah.
Or I would
can be dismissive at times. Yeah.
I would go to school and I would just start crying and be like, "I'm sad." And a teacher would take interest in me and say, "You know, Ajani has been crying." They're like, "Oh, he needs to get back to doing his work." You know, and it, you know, wasn't because my parents didn't care about me. It's just because I think I come from a generation that really didn't understand mental health.
Yeah.
And, you know, you need to be doing your studies. You need to go to college. You need to be successful. You need to make money and then take care of us when we're old.
So,
which, you know, that's what parents want. Okay.
Yeah.
So I have no doubt that they loved me, but their emotional intelligence just wasn't up there. So I went through high school trying to find ways to express my emotions. I would usually wear all black in high school, try to express my emotions, but I'm wearing all black.
Was that emo? Were you an emo kid?
I think more goth.
Okay.
But, you know, it's really no definition. I guess you could say goth because I would kind of keep to myself, wear all black. And I started writing poetry then.
Okay.
And that was my way of letting go of my emotions.
Okay.
I had many notebooks of poetry where I write about how ugly I am, how stupid I am, how no one likes me, how my parents don't like me. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I write about how I wanted to kill myself, how I wanted to hurt myself, I wanted to hurt other people. How I wanted to hurt my my father, you know, things like that. But it wasn't really about hurting them. It was just about the hurt that I had inside of me.
Yeah.
So going back to 23, moving up the years. So when I started going to college, I would go to college, have good intentions to take a full load of classes, make A's. I had the motivation to do it, but as soon as I would start, I would get into the classroom and look around and be like, this person's looking at me weird. Or I'd have to do a group project, which, you know, group projects. Or,
well, I think everybody hates group projects. Or, I don't think that that's...
Or this is something else everyone hates, public speaking
classes. Yes, those are like, two things that people just... hate. Yeah.
So you just think everyone hates you, everyone doesn't like you. And so I would start dropping out of my classes. Okay. I would just stop going. And so in high school, I had started smoking pot to help myself kind of regulate my emotions.
The anxiety a little bit too. Okay. Yeah. And, that's common.
Yeah. And that actually helped to get rid of my anxiety attacks because I wouldn't be able to know if I was having one. I was already feeling dreamy and out of my body. Mm-hmm. So if I had anxiety attack, I couldn't feel it. And I was like, cured. You know.
Were your parents aware of the drug use?
Yeah. And they just thought, you know, oh, this is a teenage thing. This is just what kids do.
Okay.
You know, they would try to ground me, take away my car, do stuff. But, you know, I'd always find money to go do it or friends.
Yeah.
So that's something that I carried with me for a very long time. And it got to the point where it was no longer enjoyable to me. It was something that I had to do. You know,
the weed.
Yeah.
Okay.
If I had some money, if it was food or pot, I know usually those go together because you got the munchies. But, you know, I would go get some pot.
Yeah.
Like I needed to be high to go to class because I had this idea of success that I got from my parents, mainly my father, that it was how much money you were making, if you could get a degree, if you got a higher degree, stay in school all your life. Oh, I'm exhausted talking about it.
Yeah.
That's how I felt.
It can be difficult.
So I would go to school, stop taking classes, start cutting myself, then go home. And this just became a reoccurring a cycle. And when I mean go home, I would go back to live with my parents. So I would go to college, try to take classes, then withdraw, then cut myself, then try to kill myself, then go home, then go to college. And then
so the cutting wasn't to kill yourself. You made intentional attempts to kill yourself, but the cutting wasn't to kill yourself.
It was a buildup.
It
was like if I can just start cutting myself, then, you know, start going horizontally.
Yeah.
Then one day I can just go vertically and one day I'll make it there. And I remember my dad saying when I went home, when I got sent home one time, and I had to medically withdraw from my classes because of the things I was going through. I remember him saying, boy, you don't want to kill yourself. If you really want to kill yourself, you would cut yourself right down here. You know, you do get the vein right here. You don't really want to kill yourself. You're just doing this for attention. And
which is something that actually a lot of people say. It's just not the best thing to say to someone who's doing it.
And I was doing it for attention because I needed help, you know? I needed to feel loved. So finally, when I went to college for my my third time, I was able to go see a psychologist for free on campus, and that was the best thing that ever happened to me. Dr. Courtney Thomas. I would describe all my experiences that, you know, I would have friends, but then I'd be afraid that they would go away, so I would push them away, or I would treat them really bad. You know, I would have boyfriends, and if they were too nice, I'd push them away. If they were too mean, I liked that. You know, please be cruel to me because somehow I deserve that.
You deserved it.
But he was just like, have you ever heard of borderline personality disorder? And I'm like, schizophrenia? What's that? That sounds kind of weird. What do you mean borderline personality disorder? So he was like, go home, kind of look it over and tell me what you think about it. So of course, first place I went was Wikipedia, and I was like, I don't know if I really trust this. And then, you know, I went to encyclopedia.com, then I went to some mental websites, and
it was a good thing you didn't go to WebMD.
Yeah.
That site.
I may have gone there.
Oh, you know, my gosh.
I went, because when you have the internet, you have access to so much information.
Absolutely.
And what I feel is, you know, you can go to one source and take it in and say, okay, you know, when I go to Wikipedia, I look at the sources, you know, so I read everything, but I also click the little numbers to look at the sources where they're coming from. And then I use those websites to kind of go off
okay.
of. So after doing a little exploration, I came back to him and I said, yeah, this kind of sounds like what I'm going through. And we kind of talked about it a little bit more, and he diagnosed me. And during that time, it was a lot of self-discovery where I spent a lot of time in mental hospitals, about 5 or 6 times going to mental hospitals because I was trying to kill myself, trying to understand myself, writing a lot of poetry, just... You know, that sense of self that you were talking about, and that's something that people with BPD are always looking for. You know, do I know who I really am? And sometimes I have to ask. I have to ask, you know, my husband, you know, who am I? You know, I what do I stand for? What am I supposed to be doing with my life? And that all goes back to childhood, you know, because maybe those questions weren't quite answered. And when I was looking for those answers, they weren't apparent. So yeah, it's something that I have to live with for the rest of my life, you know, BPD. I usually don't have too many friends because I'm afraid of how I'm going to treat them. You know, if I text,
that's defense mechanism going on.
And I use sarcasm a lot.
I know.
Because that's a defense mechanism.
It is.
But yeah, it's good to know that it has a name, though. It's good to know because I know I talked to my father about borderline personality disorder, and I told him about the symptoms, and he said, that sounds like a lot of the stuff that I'm going through, but I just call it regular life depression. That's what everybody goes through. And I'm like, that's not what everyone's supposed to be going through. That's not normal. That's not what is regular life depression?
That's
like,
not a thing.
Is that a thing?
So listeners, regular life depression is not
a
thing.
I saw it on Wikipedia, though.
it's not a thing at all. It's not a thing.
So, yeah.
Well, that's okay. Thank you for sharing that. So I just want to make sure that I clarify. So you had symptoms as early as middle school and, you know, throughout high school, things got really serious. So you were writing these poems in high school about hurting yourself, but you never attempted until you went to college. Is that what it was? And when you got to college, I guess the stress of college and all those things that were going on, that's when things just kind of escalated.
Yeah.
And at 23, you said that's when you got your first diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. All right. And so what treatments did you do?
Well,
or have you done any treatments, or have you been on medications, or, you know, how's that working?
I definitely see a therapist regularly. I mean, when you have BPD, it's
what's regularly.
Yeah. I think that maybe you were talking about this in your live Facebook, talking about when people feel like they need to see a therapist. You know, some say once a month. Some say, for me, it's every week.
Because, every week, you're weekly. Okay.
Because there's just so many things. You know, I can wake up one morning and just be anxious about the day and what am I doing with my life. Every week is a good time for me. I take mood stabilizers that kind of help keep my mood kind of regular.
Okay.
Antidepressants and anxiety medication just as needed. So if I feel like I don't like being out in crowds for too long, I don't like going places by myself. Like we went to Pride. I mean, I want to go to Pride to support, you know, the gay community. But I can't be out there for too long.
Yeah.
Because it's going to get
overwhelming.
So even though I have my husband with me, my sister with me, my nephew, I need to either take some medicine or leave.
Okay. So you mentioned that you're married.
Mm-hmm.
And so how is married life? So I remember, you know, you said earlier in the show, and you recently reiterated that you kind of push people away, which is very common for your particular disorder, the whole push-pull relationship. So how do you deal with your issue and your marriage?
I thought you were going to ask, how did you get married?
No. Well, you're a person. I feel like everybody can get married.
Well, for people with BPD, I think we never think we're going to find anyone who is going to be understanding or compassionate or just understanding enough to want to be with us. You have to be patient,
mm-hmm.
you know, because my emotions are so intense. You know, when I'm with my husband, one second I'm a very loving person. Mm-hmm. You know, I love to kiss him and hug him and be with him. But then, you know, he'll do one thing or I'll do one thing and start thinking about it too much, and then just get really angry, just enraged. And that's the BPD rage that I can't escape. Like, I can't quite do anything about it. I can only let it pass, just mm-hmm. let it in its own time, and then go back and say sorry. So there are a lot of apologies.
Okay.
A lot of I'm sorry, you know. But
so that's the balance for you. You it happens, mm-hmm. but you are you know, self-aware enough to apologize about it.
You have to try to, I guess, stop it from happening in the beginning. Like, sometimes I can feel the rage burning. I'm like, you're not really mad about this situation. You're just mad because you feel misunderstood.
Okay.
You know? If I say I want to leave, there's too many people, and someone says, you know, oh, no, let's stay. It's really cool. I might get mad because I feel misunderstood. Or I might be like, okay, fine. Okay, cool. We'll stay. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of that passive-aggressive. But yeah, it takes somebody... It takes a special person to be with someone with a BPD. So, you know, I just want anyone that does have BPD to know that, you know, it's not impossible. Just because somebody, you know, a lot of my partners would tell me that I'm too much, mm-hmm. or I have too many emotions, or, mm-hmm. you know, what we all hear, you're too sensitive. You're way too sensitive.
Yeah.
Well, you know, maybe you just need to be more understanding, you know, to somebody who is really sensitive, because there's nothing wrong with that. I can use my sensitivity, my emotions, to help people to understand emotions. It's like Kanye West is a superpower, you know.
Oh,
your mental health, you know.
I don't know if you want to use him as the best example at the moment.
But Kanye, come on. No, I think there's a grain of truth in what he was saying there, that, you know, your mental health problems can be a superpower if you use it responsibly. You know, you can't go out there off your meds and just doing crazy things.
Mm-hmm.
But because I understand emotions, that helps me to understand other people and relate to other people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a superpower, because I'm sure you know some people that are just not able to do that.
Yeah.
You know, not able to. And that's why I really loved working in hospitality, because I could relate to people.
Okay.
But yeah.
And so how was that? So, you know, well, let me address the marriage thing. So contrary to popular belief, it was interesting to hear you say that you didn't feel like you would ever get married because of your disorder. And it was interesting with regards to a lot of times, at least the people that I know that are in that have borderline personality disorder, they're married or they're in relationships or long relationships. I don't want to say the irony or the interesting thing is that a lot of them who have it, they are in relationships with a narcissist. Now, I know I happen to personally know your husband. I know he's not a narcissist.
I was like, excuse me? Do you know something I don't know?
I know he's not a narcissist. But normally, this particular personality disorder, borderline personality disorder, is attracted to the narcissism because, like you said, when they were mean to me, I... like that even more. And because borderline personalities tend to be extremely loving and extremely needy, that feeds the ego of a narcissist. So they actually pair, unfortunately, really well.
And I dated a few of those narcissists.
You did? Okay.
And it's because you want to please somebody, mm-hmm. you know, and you're not able to. And also, you know, there's something wrong with that person and you want to help them. You know, you want to, maybe if I can change you, maybe if I'm really nice to you, you'll see that I'm worthy of your love.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to get out of that because you just cannot change some people.
That's a message. Not for anybody with a mental health issue. That's just a message.
Yeah, you just cannot change them. Now, I mean, maybe one day they'll wake up and be like, you know what? I've been treating this person bad for long enough. Mm-hmm. It's time for me to change my ways. Well, that would be amazing. But I have never met a... You know, with a relationship like that, you need to just leave the other person alone, mm-hmm. and find somebody who has gone... who is mentally healthy.
Yeah.
You know? And... you have to be mentally healthy yourself as much as you can.
Yeah,
you know? I'm absolutely. Not perfect, but you know, I do realize I have a personality disorder, mm-hmm. and I'm working towards getting better every day. And I believe that's why my husband, you know, wants to be with me, because he sees that, you know, we have more good times than bad, and mm-hmm. I'm working towards it. It's not like I'm, you know, abusing him or telling him, you know, horrible things because I want to.
Yeah.
You know, I'm working on it. And that's just what a relationship is. Any Absolutely. Healthy relationship, you know, both of you have to make each other stronger.
Absolutely. You mentioned that you worked in hospitality. So a lot of times people with mental health issues, just in general, not just your particular disorder, there is difficulty, you know, holding down a stable job for an extended period of time. And you used to be a manager. So you were a manager and you were doing your thing. And, you know, for someone who has borderline personality disorder, we've talked about it, you know, on the last podcast that, you know, they're high functioning, especially a high functioning borderline, a person who has borderline personality disorder. They're your doctors, your lawyers, your judges, mm. your managers. They're doing all these things, but they tend to lash out at the ones they love. Did you have a hard time?
Yes. Yes.
Did you have a hard time working, you know, while you were working? Like, what was the struggle and how did you manage that? Because, I mean, you kept your job. I think you were there for, what, 2-3 years or something like that?
3 years.
Exactly. So how did you find ways to basically keep your job? So, you know, when you're married, you talked about the fact that sometimes you lash out at your husband, right? But he's mm-hmm. your husband and you can apologize and, you know, you can acknowledge that. But you're in hospitality, a client-facing industry. You can't really lash out at customers and like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean it. See, what's going on with me is this. Like, that's not going to work. So how did you navigate that minefield of customers, you know, coming in and you mm-hmm. dealing with the different attitudes and personalities? How did that work for you?
Well, I know, and this is not to advocate for anything, but I smoked a lot of pot because that is the only way that I could be in that atmosphere for that amount really? Of time. And I had to quit doing that after I left my job. I decided to put in my 2 weeks a couple of months ago and say, you know, I have to focus on myself because, mm-hmm. you know, it's, you know, I have nothing against if you want to smoke pot, but it should be something that you enjoy doing or, you know, it is, I guess, helping
Not
you.
Not an addiction.
Yeah. And it just got to a point where I had to do it to go to work. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I never liked being around people, but I was able to by thinking about, let me see, when I started the job, I really enjoyed it because of the people that I worked with, and that made it enjoyable. When the people I was working with started to respect me a little bit more and see that I was a genuine person, and that's something that people with BPD have, we can kind of show people that we're real people. That's something that highly sensitive people have, because mm-hmm. that's refreshing for people to see. You know, some people are just so guarded and fake. Mm-hmm. You know, it's good to see real people. When I saw that they were respecting me that way, I was just like, I guess supervisor is the next, you know, they started promoting me to supervisor. I didn't ask for it. They started calling me supervisor before I'd even taken that role as a mm-hmm. joke. And then it came to the point where angry guests would come up and they'd be like, oh, go get the supervisor. And I would just be like, I'm the supervisor. How can I help you? And blah, 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 blah. Yes, ma'am. Well, you can't. Sorry. You know, so I just take that role. And so I kind of just, they kind of promoted me to that role. And when I got that promotion, that's when my dad started paying attention to me. So he started saying, oh, man, I'm proud of you. Oh, and he would tell his patients and tell people, oh, can you... my son went to college all these years. He didn't know what he wanted to do. And then he was working at Olive Garden. And then now he's working at a hotel. Now he's getting promotions. And then when I saw that, I was like, oh, validation. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh my God, my dad mm-hmm. loves me now. And so I got another promotion a couple years later to accountant. But doing all that work was killing me inside. You know, I had to take more and more and more medication. I had to go home and I would think about things that happened 10 or 11 days ago, just worrying about, did I do that right? Did I do that right? Mm-hmm. Did I do that right? You know, mm-hmm. get high, drink. So really
there's just a lot of self-medication going on there.
And I had to, because I was trying to make someone proud. And when I left that job, my dad did not pay the same amount of attention to me. And I recently had a conversation with him where he would tell me, you know, how proud he was of me before. You know, I had got an offer for a job in Florida. It was going to pay me salary, you know, and I told him about it and I was so proud. I think my voice got a little bit deeper. I was like, daddy, you know, I got a job offer in Florida for blah, 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 K. And, you know, I just need your input. And he's like, whoa, you know, oh my goodness. And when I didn't get that job, he stopped paying attention to me. And, you know, he would say, you know, he used to be proud of me when he would tell people that would come into his office, kids, and be like, I don't know what I want to do in college. He'd be like, oh, well, my son, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, well, what do you tell them now? He's like, well, I don't tell them anything. I have nothing to tell them. You know, I have nothing to be proud of. Wow. Think about your dad saying that to you. Mm-hmm. The person that you're trying to please, which that isn't right at all anyway, that you're trying to please them. But the person that you finally felt like you were able to please and make happy, telling you, I'm not proud of you anymore. You're not successful. Mm-hmm. And I was like, why don't you tell them I'm a mental health advocate? Why don't you tell them I have a podcast that's successful and I'm helping people with mental disorders? I'm helping introverts. I'm helping people that usually don't have a voice. You know, people are listening. Why don't you tell them that? He's like, that's not success because you're not making money. You know, mm-hmm. So for me, it just clicked in my head. Damn, I've been seeing success equals money when really to me as an idealist, I see success equaling happiness. I just want to be happy. Yeah. Like that's all I want. I don't care how much money I'm making. I just want to be happy. But to mm-hmm. him, happiness is just a byproduct
of success.
You know?
Okay.
Yeah. It's just you need to be making the money. And that's what I was chasing. And I realized I just felt so, I felt so bad to think about my past was all about, my past at the hotel was all about getting more money, getting more success, getting more power, getting more everything, just so I could make one person happy. And mm-hmm. when they weren't happy, I wasn't happy. So it's tough, you know, but you know, you need to chase after what makes you happy. I think that's true for anybody. I don't think chasing after money, money is great. Money is good. We need money to live. But if you're not happy doing what you're doing, what's the point of it? What are you doing?
That's a fair assessment. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. I appreciate that.
You can buy my book.
Okay. I find it interesting. So one of the things that we talked about before, not you and I, Dr. Gay and I, shout out to Dr. Gay. She's awesome. Dr. Gay and I, was that there is a rift in the primary caregivers role or relationship, which causes a lot of times borderline personality disorder, right? And so it's usually it's the mom, right? It's usually, and I talked about that. I was like, usually it's the mom that kind of causes this. Unfortunately, mamas, you know, I apologize to them. But for you, it appears to be your dad that has caused this. And I find it interesting with this, what did he call it? General depression, general world depression. Is that what it was? General life.
Normal life depression.
Normal life depression.
It's normal.
Yeah. Normal life depression. He probably has it as well, but it's undiagnosed clearly. And so it's basically, we talked about the fact that one parent's going to pass it to their child, at least one of their children. You know, that's kind of how that is, because they don't know how to form that bond because they didn't have it. And so it's such, they kind of pass that on. What is your relationship now with your dad doesn't seem to be on the up and up based on how you're describing it. Okay, you're shaking your head. Nope. He's shaking his head. I know you can't see that. So do you speak at all, or do you find ways to limit those boundaries of, you know, I have to love you from a distance, or is there just no contact at this point? Mm-hmm. And are you still trying to please him?
I'm no longer trying to please him, even though I will. It's like when you have an ex, say, so you're just like, I'm done with that ex.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But then that person did this to me. Blah, blah. You know, you're still talking about that ex.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I do that with Chris. I'm just like, I can't believe he said that. I can't believe he did that. It's like, why can't you just let it go? Because it's so ingrained in me. It's a part of who I am. I have, you know, this personality disorder is kind of stemming from that a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, I never, I guess, particularly felt super close to either one of my parents. I guess I'm closer to my mother. But with my father, it's love at a distance. I don't, it's sad, but the least amount of contact that I have with him, the better, because he will only bring me down. He will make me think that I'm a failure. He will make me feel like I am a failure because I'm not succeeding the way that he wants me to.
Okay.
And I know in my mind, and other people know, that that's just not true.
Yeah.
You know, if he doesn't want to tell his friends and his patients about me because he's ashamed of me, so be it. But I am not ashamed of myself. There's just no room in my life for that. So I have to kind of push him aside and just be like, hey, how you doing? That's good. See you later. That I would love to be closer to my dad. And he always whines, you know, that no one calls him unless they need money. No one calls him unless they just want something. Well, what else do I have to call you about? I told him I was depressed a couple of weeks ago. I said, you know, I had to get back on my antidepressants. I was feeling depressed. And he said, oh, and he walked away. And I had a conversation with him after that. I said, why was that all that you said? He said, well, what else was I supposed to say? I was like, you could have hugged me. You could have kissed me. You could have said, tell me more, son. He's like, oh, well, I mean, I'm just not going to cure your depression. I'm like, no, it probably isn't, but it probably make me feel better. I mean, that's mm-hmm. looking for that validation. So it's just no longer looking for validation from him, you know?
Intentionally looking for it.
If I need validation, I can find that in my husband. I can find it in my four other siblings that love me and are not ashamed of what I'm doing. I can find it in my two sister-in-laws. I can find it in my three nephews. I can find it in my mother. But I don't got to find it in my father. Like, that's the one person that I don't have to chase down anymore. So it's been a slow process, but I have to learn to just let that go, because it really just does not matter what one person thinks.
Okay. And I think that's a really good place for us to end, but a great, you ended it wonderfully, actually.
Thank you.
With regards to, you know, you being comfortable with who you are and you being, you know, realizing and recognizing that, hey, this is where I am. And, you know, I love myself. You said that. I love myself. I'm okay with where I am. I'm okay with who I am right now. And I think that's amazing. And that's an amazing place to be. And in all honesty, you know, as a therapist, when we're treating someone with borderline personality disorder, you are the goal. We want our patients to get to the point where they're just like, you know what? I have this issue, but I still love me and I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to constantly work, on myself. And we're going to get to that point. That's honestly where we want, because personality disorders, there's no cure for a personality disorder. You're always going to have it, but being self-aware enough to say, you know what? I'm okay with this and I'm going to continue to work on it is such an amazing thing. And I applaud you for sharing your story and I appreciate it so much. But I'm going to let you have the kind of last word. Is there anything you want to let anybody know about borderline personality disorder, about you, or anything you want to share? Closing words.
Not sure. I think I would just want everyone to know that their emotions are important and that their emotions are valid. And no matter how they're feeling, you know, there are positive and healthy ways to express them. And no matter what mental disorder you have or that you think you have or whatever you're going through, you deserve to be heard and you deserve mm-hmm. to be alive. And that therapy is not something that is negative. A diagnosis is not something, you know, a mental diagnosis is not something that is negative. It's something that you may need to work on, you know, to make yourself better. And that's okay. I mean, my life has done a 360 just, you know, finding out things about me, finding out, you know, I'm an INFP, finding out I'm an introvert, finding out I'm an idealist, finding out I have borderline personality disorder, finding out I have depression, finding out that I have anxiety, finding out all these things, all these labels just help me come closer to being a better me. And, you know, it's okay. It's okay to get therapy. I think that's really important. It's okay to get therapy. It's okay to talk about these things, and don't listen to other people that tell you that it's not, because it can only make you better. And I think you said, what's the worst that can happen? You know, what is the worst that can happen?
You're right. You're right. I know we said that was going to be your last word, but I completely forgot. What are your social media handles so that everyone can follow you and, you know, hear more about your amazing story?
Yeah, so we have on Twitter, Borderline Ideal.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we have a website, borderlineidealist.com, where we have our podcasts, blog posts, and also we have a Facebook group, Borderline Idealist.
All right. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Thank you so much for being here. I appreciate you. Thank you for being my guest. And once again, thank you everyone for tuning in. I am so grateful that you decided to listen to me and to Ajani. Hope to see you all next episode. All right. Bye. All opinions shared on this podcast are solely that of the participants and do not reflect the views of any governing mental health professional board. The host of this podcast has received written consent to share any and all stories that have been presented.